Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Radio Islam International. It is the learning curve, and yes, on air tuition time. Today we're going to be doing geography. Before I go ahead, the name is Noman Panjbaya, and my honorable co-host Hafiz Hanzala Hafiji, the man behind the scenes, Brother Ziad. And inshallah, we're going to be keeping you company right up until 4 p.m. this afternoon. If you're just joining us and it's the first day you're listening to us during this lockdown period, from 3 to 4, inshallah, we're going to be keeping you company. And on a daily basis, we're going to be having different subject on air tuitions. If you have any questions, inshallah, then you can WhatsApp us on 072-786-1548. That is 072-786-1548. I hope that those that are in the FET phase, you have your papers, your pens ready. And inshallah, you're ready to take down those notes as our lesson unfolds. So again, if you have any questions, maybe you might be studying from home, you can inshallah send it through to us. And Mr. Ibrahim Suleiman, an educator at Nirvana Secondary School in Lanesia, he's going to be joining us very shortly, inshallah. Let me welcome Hafiz Hanzala Hafiji. Hafiz, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Noman.
Before we go ahead, Hafiz Hanzala, so far, what's your thoughts been on the programs that we've had so far? And of course, at the same time, the feedback that we've received from the listeners.
Well, alhamdulillah, we must start off by thanking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for making this possible. You know, it has been very positive in the feedback that we've been getting from a lot of listeners as well as educators and the students out there, mentioning that definitely it's assisting and making it possible for them to at least revise and to go through some of the content that wouldn't have been possible to do if it wasn't for Radio Islam. So alhamdulillah, you know, we can continue benefiting from this program, inshallah. And we're looking forward to hearing more from you on Radio Islam International. For this, you need to interact with us on 072-786-1548.
Okay, so as we've mentioned, today we're going to be doing geography, inshallah, for the FET phase 10, 11, as well as 12. We're going to be joined by Mr. Ibrahim Suleiman in a few seconds. Stay tuned.
Allah has given me a cotton candy sky, a little bit of blue, pink, purple, and white. I sometimes see the gray and I sometimes feel the rain, but I'll see the colors of the cotton candy sky again. I see the red of my mother's love, the true blue of my father's hugs. I see the orange of my sibling's smile. I see the pink and the white of the love of my life, and the deep, deep green that all children bring are the coolness of my eyes. For Allah has given me a cotton candy.
This is On Air School Tuition on Radio Islam International.
Mr. Ibrahim Suleiman, an educator at Nirvana Secondary School in Indonesia, joins us at Radio Islam International. Mr. Suleiman, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, brother Noman and Hafiz Hanzala, as well as listeners at home.
Jazakallah for giving us your time, and inshallah we hope that this is going to be beneficial for our learners. We're going to go straight into it. Again, just a reminder, if you have any questions, 072-786-1548. And for those that are doing revision, take out your pens and papers, inshallah, and you can take down notes as we go through our geography questions as well as lesson for this afternoon, inshallah. We're going to go straight into our first question, and Hafiz Hanzala Hafiji is going to put it out to Mr. Suleiman.
Mr. Suleiman, you know, a lot of the learners are mentioning that it's much easier to swat the practical, the theoretical component and understand this because it's easier and it doesn't require a lot of time in comparison to the theoretical component. One learner wants to know, how is it possible that they can create more importance and give more emphasis and time to the practical section of the component?
You know, Hafiz Hanzala, I always tell my learners at school that the map work paper, the practical paper as you are calling it, is actually guaranteeing the learners marks because it's kind of like an open book test. Right. The map is where all the answers will come from. They just need to follow certain procedures in order to get those answers. Right. And with regards to the importance of it, I think it's important for learners to understand where it can fit in with regards to a career choice for them. And that will perhaps make them take it more seriously.
Jazakallah, Mr. Suleiman. We're going to move on into our next question, and Pradhan Oman will be.
Yeah, so as we mentioned about the importance of what we would say having geography and understanding that geography is a science as well. Practice makes perfect. So as you've been speaking about map work when it comes to geography, of course it holds importance. Now, as a student, you're sitting at home, how do you practice map work when, for example, maybe a teacher at school doesn't give her maps out for kids to take home because of the limited number of them, or for example due to the high cost of those maps? How does the child practice map work at home if they are studying geography?
Generally, at schools we use textbooks. Those textbooks should have a few maps to work from, but in the event that they don't have any maps to work from, they simply need to go to some sequencing of steps in their notebooks, and they just need to be using various figures to answer those questions using the correct steps. Yes, they will lack the ability to complete interpretation questions because those apply directly to the topographic and orthophoto maps that we are using. However, simple things like magnetic declination, true bearing, coordinates, those can be practiced at home by simply drawing your own graphs, using your knowledge of the steps, and then creating your own questions to practice on.
So when it comes to map work, if I stand to be corrected, it counts 25% of the geography mark. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So is more importance normally given to developmental geography and the theoretical part of it?
I would say that especially with regards to the new curriculum outline, and even those teachers that have been attending the meetings and those teachers that have been marking and moderating for some time, they will understand the importance of integrating theory and map work.
Okay.
In fact, in the recent map work paper that was written by our matrix not long ago for term one, it actually included a lot of theoretical knowledge, particularly the river system, and that was integrated into the map where they had to draw from a theoretical aspect to answer those questions.
And of course, what we would say, learning the keys is of utmost importance. So for someone that's in someone that takes geography as a subject in grade 10, for them to understand the keys of a map or the symbols of a map is of quite of importance. You know, in grade 7, you already start learning about the symbols. But if you look at it, if you look at the social science subject, many kids don't understand the importance of those symbols. So, for example, maybe it's a learner that, who didn't, learn the symbols, or they didn't remember the symbols. Now when they come into grade 10, what's an easy way for them to know or learn the keys and the symbols on a map?
Well, they need to understand, firstly, that a lot of the symbols are in Afrikaans, and they shouldn't confuse. For example, a store is actually a winkel, and the symbol is a W, and it can easily be confused with a school, which is an S. So these are simple marks that learners can be throwing away in their exams.
Right.
And I think that they should definitely familiarize themselves with those keys before entering a map work paper.
Chief Editor, and you know also, Mr. Suleiman, if you look at these symbols from grade 8 already, these symbols are always repeatedly seen on the maps. It's not something that when you come to grade 10, 11, or 12, then only you're seeing them for the first time. For most of the learners in grade 8, when you're introducing them to the different types of maps, you know, the orthophoto and the topographic maps, then they see these symbols. It's just that learners need to be, making sure they know the differences and practicing or understanding them much better. Well, anyways, we move on into the news, into the next section, where one of the learners are asking the questions, how do tropical cyclones form?
When it comes to tropical cyclones, Afe Zanzala, the learners need to understand that it needs, there are several favorable conditions before a tropical cyclone can form. One of them being that the sea temperature, the ocean temperature, it forms over the ocean. So the ocean temperature needs to be 27 degrees Celsius or higher than that.
Right.
The reason being is because it needs a lot of humidity. And Another thing that learners need to understand is that it needs to take place slightly, approximately 5 degrees north or south of the equator. Reason being, it needs Coriolis force. This was covered in grade 11. Mm-hmm. Coriolis force is the deflecting wind, the process of the winds deflecting, and this is what is needed in order to set that spinning motion of the tropical cyclone into effect. Mm-hmm. And they also need to understand that there has to be as little friction as possible, which is why it takes place over the ocean. And they need to know that tropical cyclones travel from east to west. They travel away from the equator because Coriolis force gets weaker as we move towards the equator. Right. So because it needs Coriolis force, it needs to travel away from the equator, and it will obviously increase in strength over the oceans.
Okay, yeah, hopefully that answers the question. So if you do have any queries, inshallah, with regards to geography, map work, as well as the theoretical part, maybe developmental geography, etc., you can WhatsApp us at 072-786-1548. Another question coming through saying, Assalamu alaikum, please explain the term drainage basin.
Generally, drainage basin, it's best explained using a diagram, but in simple terms, what I can tell you is that it is simply the portion of land, mostly in upper areas, higher lying areas, where rain is then collected in the mountain before it becomes a river.
Okay, so I think that's an easy way for them to remember that. Okay, another one saying, how does one calculate magnetic declination?
When it comes to magnetic declination, there are three very important steps that learners need to follow. These steps are sometimes given in the examination. Sometimes you have to know them off by heart. But basically, step one is to calculate the number of years, the difference in the number of years. So when it comes to this, learners should always remember to ignore the 2 years. There are sometimes they put 2 years in brackets. Those should be ignored. They should only consider the singular year that occurs immediately after the words mean magnetic declination. In that same sentence, there is a bracket with a year. That is the year to be considered. They should then take that year, subtract it from the current year we are working with, and that will give them the number of years. In the second step, learners need to consider the mean annual change. So they need to take the mean annual change. It's given in minutes. On the map, this information comes from the map, and they should then multiply this by the number of years that they have calculated in step one. And this will give them an answer in minutes. They then need to take this answer and convert it into degrees and minutes before continuing to step three, in which they will use the magnetic declination taken from the map. And if it's going to be added or subtracted, then they need to use the answer from step two inside step three, not forgetting the units. Learners, do not forget the units. You will not receive those marks if you forget those units. We are dealing with west of true north or east of true north, mostly. In South Africa, we are using west of true north, so that the answer from step two needs to be added in step three and not subtracted if it's west of true north.
Okay, so hopefully that also answers the question to them. When it comes to what you would say magnetic declination and working out map work, what do you think is most confusing for learners as you've been through with the grade 10s, 11s, and 12s when it comes to geography? What is a common mistake that they make when it comes to map work that you've picked up that learners normally confuse?
Well, a lot of the mistakes come from, I would say, the calculation sometimes. Sometimes learners confuse. When it comes to coordinates, learners need to understand that because South Africa is in the southern eastern hemisphere, we can only give coordinates using south and then east. Mm-hmm. And very common in the worry that learners have into an exam, the pressure on them, they make these errors, and they put east before south, and that is completely incorrect. Also, learners sometimes confuse the steps. They miss out steps, but what is very common is learners forget to insert units, and therefore they will lose those marks.
So normally is there follow-through marking when it comes to geography, or if, for example, you leave a unit out and then the entire question is marked incorrect?
Yes, they are very strict about the units. If those units are left out, unfortunately those marks have been lost.
Okay, another question that would be coming to mind is when it comes to developmental geography, what is of utmost importance in those sections for those that are in grade 11 and 12, understanding that every year it's a follow-through from grade 10 into 11 into 12, and then you get tested, of course, finally in your matric exam. What is of utmost importance?
Yes, again, bringing back to your question on why is geography considered a science, and this is very important for teachers as well as learners to understand, is that this concept, like you are saying, began in grade 10, and it's a build-up of knowledge. In fact, we can go to the extent of saying it is started in grade 9, where we start to talk about the developmental, the measures of development. So these learners need to understand, especially in today's time, a lot of the word sustainability is being thrown around a lot, as well as the word resources and these things. So learners need to be able to create links between the word development and the way that it affects economy, the way that it affects resources. All these things are linked, the way that it affects the environment. So I would say of utmost importance is for learners not to look at development in isolation, but instead consider its effects on the environment as well as the people, as well as the economy.
When it comes to third term content, it's mostly has to do with theoretical work, if I stand to be corrected. Many learners normally, what you would say, have that mindset to say, you know what, now it's the time just to SWAT. Would you regard it as SWATing, or does an individual have to study it and understand what's meant by all those, what we would say, content or information that is being provided?
Yes, I would never encourage learners to SWAT geography. Geography is something that needs to be understood, especially considering the fact that all the topics are related to one another in some way or another, and they can be used or drawn upon to answer various questions. So learners should never make the mistake of simply SWATing and assuming that an answer can fit into any scenario. They need to adapt from various knowledge, even across grades, from grade 9 to 10 to 11 to 12. They need to understand that the knowledge is interlinked, and they need to draw upon that knowledge in order for them to adequately answer those questions.
Mr. Silman, here's another question coming through. It says, what does the acronym GIS stand for? And can Mr. Silman kindly provide a few components of GIS?
Not a problem at all. GIS stands for Geographic Information Systems. Geographic Information Systems in itself is kind of a software. Like, for example, if you are intending to type something on your computer, you would need Microsoft Word.
Right.
So GIS is the software that allows people to capture, to store, to analyze, to manipulate information, spatial information regarding Earth that has been taken from various devices. One of them, most common, the term we use is remote sensing.
Right.
This is a very important aspect of GIS. It allows us to gather information about an area without actually being in contact with that area.
Right.
So I would say that something like a satellite could give us satellite imaging, and from there we can perhaps create maps using aerial photography and those types of things. One of the components of GIS are very simple. We have hardware, a computer, for example. Then the software itself, that's another component. The program of GIS itself, that's a component. And then I would say people are a very important component of GIS, because people are firstly the ones who design the computer, who design the software. And then people are also inputting information into the software in order for them to manipulate it and get information out of it, so that we can display them as maps or aerial photographs and so on.
Chazakla, Mr. Silman, here's another question. Can you kindly give us steps and provide an easier way of how to calculate area?
Area is a very simple calculation. You just need to know your distance formula.
Correct.
And you need to know which map you are working with. If you are using your topographic map, then firstly you need to understand, or rather you need to determine, does the question want your answer in meters squared or kilometers squared? If you are using a topographic map and they want the answer in kilometers squared, then in your distance formula, remember you are going to have two of them this time, because you are going to have one for your length time scale and your breadth time scale. They can be written in the same sentence. So you're going to open a bracket, length time scale, close your bracket, open a second bracket, breadth time scale. And if you want your answer in kilometers, you are going to be using 0.5 kilometers as your scale. If you are using meters, then you are using 500 meters as your scale. This is for topographic maps. And generally, they will just have to calculate, then the length will be the longer side, the breadth will be the shorter side. And using two distance formulas, they will easily get this answer.
Another question coming through, it says, Mr. Sirma, can you tell us what are some tools that can be used in order to calculate winding distance? You know, when it comes to a straight line distance, yeah, we just need to use our ruler and it makes it easier. But with the winding distance, it's a bit different. And this learner wants to know what are some ways in which we can calculate winding distance.
This brings me to a very, very fond memory of mine when I was in school and learners didn't bring their string. Generally, learners would bring their string. Then it was very funny to see learners sharing their shoelace. Learners would take out their shoelace and start using them. So you can always improvise, learners. There is a method also of doing this using a piece of paper. However, this definitely has to be described graphically, and I don't want to confuse learners. So please, learners, don't forget your string. And if you've forgotten your string, then be generous with your shoelace.
And then you can, your parents will be generous with hiding as well at home. Yes, we have with us Mr. Ibrahim Suleiman, an educator at Nirvana Secondary School here in Lanesia, and inshallah he'll be answering all your questions. You can keep those interactions coming through 072-786-1548. The time has just gone almost 30 minutes past the hour of 3. Stay tuned to The Learning Curve. Yes, The Learning Curve on Radio Islam International. And if you do have any questions, 072-786-1548. The WhatsApp numbers, rather the WhatsApp messages are coming through. We're going to try and inshallah push as much as possible. Remember, this segment ends at around 3:40, 3:45. So if there are any more questions, then we forward it to the next week, inshallah. Have you answered another question?
Well, here's another question coming through, Mr. Suleiman. It says, Mr. Suleiman, can you provide us the steps for a cross-section and how to calculate a cross-section?
Sure, a cross-section is not necessarily a calculation,
right?
Rather a graphical demonstration.
Right.
So learners need to be aware that they need to create a graph. Firstly, learners should go about this cross-section by taking a piece of paper and then placing that piece of paper onto their map between the points identified. For example, if the question says, draw the detailed cross-section of the line AB, then learners first need to identify that line on their maps. They then need to take a piece of paper. They should place it on that line. And learners need to be very accurate when they are doing this. They need to indicate all the contour lines that their piece of paper is cutting through. They need to mark them with their respective altitudes. And learners also need to be very aware of any rivers or roads, because generally these questions come with a follow-up question where the examiner might ask learners to identify where was the road, or where was the railway, or where was the river. In fact, they can even go on to say the learner should mark off the various characteristics of the slope. So learners should begin by taking that piece of paper and drawing in those contour lines, or just marking them off. They should then create a graph. Very important is that this graph should have a heading. It should be called, for example, cross-section of the line AB. They then need to create a simple X and Y axis. The Y axis, the lines on the Y axis will be equidistant, and they will represent the general heights. If it's a topographic map, then in 20s, and if it's an orthophoto map, then in 5s, and this should be given in meters, because that's the altitude we are using on maps, meters. And then learners should then on the x-axis place their piece of paper and recreate those areas where the contour lines have intersected the page. They should then simply just match the heights with where that item was on their page and then join their dots. And this should give them an accurate representation of the cross-section that they were trying to demonstrate.
On point, Chazakla, Mr. Silliman. Well, earlier on you mentioned it, you know, one of the most confusing topics for learners is also coordinates. They find difficulty and very easily they get confused between the south and the east, you know. So one of the listeners actually asked, how is it possible that we can calculate coordinates more easily, and what are some of the common mistakes that we can avoid in this topic?
Excellent question. I think it's a very common problem, and it's a very easy one once you learn the steps. So learners should always familiarize themselves with south before east, and they also need to understand that each set, when I say set, I mean for south and for east. So south needs to have a degree, a minute, and seconds, and so does east need to have a degree, a minute, and seconds. Learners also need to remember that when it comes to south, we always measure from the top going downwards, because in actual fact, when we tell someone about south, we are actually telling them that we are moving south of our equator. And when it comes to east, learners should always measure from the left across towards the right, because we are moving away from our Greenwich meridian. And the degrees and minutes, I'm sure learners are quite familiar with. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the seconds, the easiest way for me is learners need to open a bracket. They need to create a division multiplied by another division. And when it comes to south, let's say now we're doing south. So a learner should open that bracket, put a division sign. The denominator of this division sign should be 37 millimeters. The reason being here is because the block size of every south minute is 37 millimeters, give or take. Sometimes there might be some errors, because I'm sure those learners and teachers who have ever held a page that has come out straight from the printer, they'll know that it's quite warm, it's quite hot. Mm. And this is because the printer sometimes makes these pages hot, it then prints on them, and then once they shrink down to size again, there could be slight variances in the 37 millimeters, but generally that's the amount of millimeters per block. So that's the denominator for the first fraction. They should then multiply it by 60 over 1, not forgetting that we are working with 60 because there are 60 seconds per minute.
Right.
And an easy way to do this is learners should measure the block, which we have now confirmed to be 37 millimeters. Then whichever point they are looking for example, if the question says, give the coordinates of Trigg Beacon 1, 5, then learners should measure from the top. When I say top, I mean where that block has started, the line on which the minute has started. And they should measure downwards into that block until they find their point out of millimeters. Now, this millimeters will be the numerator. It will go over 37, which means this point was a certain amount of millimeters out of 37 millimeters, which is the block size, multiplied by 60 over 1. And that should give them the south coordinate. They should then do the same thing for east. This time they should measure from the left across to the right. This is for the seconds.
Right.
And for seconds, the block size is generally 31 or 32 millimeters. Learners should always measure their maps to confirm this, but generally it is 31 or 32 millimeters, and that will be the denominator for the first fraction regarding the east coordinate.
Okay, another question coming through you on WhatsApp. It says, Assalamu alaikum, do we need to know earthquakes and volcanoes in detail?
When it comes to earthquakes and volcanoes, this is now the grade 10. Should be a grade 10 learner. I would say that when it comes to earthquakes and volcanoes, definitely you should know your diagrams well. You should know the different characteristics of the diagram and with labels. When it comes to earthquakes, generally these are given in the form of case studies. You should know what instruments are used to determine or to prevent. Well, earthquakes can't be prevented, but we can predict them to an extent. And also we should put into place various contingency measures to minimize damage and loss of lives, etc. So I would say that learners should definitely focus on those and should not just bypass them or think that they don't weigh a lot of marks. It's easy marks. When it comes to a case study, it's generally easy marks, and learners definitely should pass on this opportunity to score them.
Mr. Sulaiman, you know, from the amount of, from the time that you started teaching, can you tell, you know, some of the most important topics that are tested on a yearly basis? You know, some of those most common questions and some of the most common topics that learners need to be well prepared for.
Sure, and definitely this is where the map work comes in, because from grade 9, some teachers from grade 8 already start teaching coordinates in detail. From grade 9, they move on to map interpretation. Then when it comes to grade 10, they start dealing with calculations and start to involve GIS. These are questions that present themselves over the years all the way until grade 12. So learners should definitely not take them lightly. Also, when it comes to theory, then when it comes to rivers, I believe learners start with rivers in grade 9 when they do the topics of river erosion and all those things. Right. So learners should definitely pay careful consideration to these topics.
Right.
And I would think that learners who know that they are definitely going to be taking geography from grade 10, 11 and 12, at an early age of grade 9, they should already involve themselves with asking those grade 12 learners perhaps to borrow them a textbook over break, or just to browse through the textbook so they themselves can pick up on what knowledge needs to be built upon for them to adequately answer questions in grade 12.
A message coming through here saying, Assalamu alaikum. I just wanted to know, when it comes to studying distribution and density as well as I think there's a typo there, but term 3 content, I find it difficult to try and learn all of it due to the large number of large amount of information in it. How is it best that I can study that part?
Yes, this is not specific to this question of this learner, but rather to all learners for all subjects. When you are feeling overwhelmed regarding the content, regarding the amount of work that you need to cover, I would say definitely refer yourself to past papers. Go through a lot of past papers, because you will get a very good idea of what is examinable and how teachers have chosen to question certain topics. And this will definitely guide your studying methods.
Moving on to the next question, Mr. Sulaiman, this learner talks about land use zones and wants to know, what does the terminology or the term CBD stand for, and why is it so important when it comes to land use?
The CBD is your central business district, and it is a land use zone that encompasses various things. It encompasses residential, you've got some services, you've got some retail outlets, definitely accompanied with transport nodes, you've got a bus stop, you've got a train station, you've got a taxi rank. And the reason why this plays a very important role in understanding land use in general is because we can consider the central business district, the CBD, we can consider it as an anchor point of activity, and everything revolves around it, and it plays a very important role in the economy. And if you go on to explore the effects on the environment, you can say that because of its nature, it encompasses a lot of activities, which then brings in a lot of people, various amounts of traffic and other transport nodes, and variety of various services involved there. So because of the amount of items it encompasses, it's going to definitely impact the environment more than any other land use would. It's going to impact the economy as well more than any other land use would. And it's the life of any urban area. It generates the movement. You can say the movement is generated from the CBD.
Jazakallah so much for that, Mr. Sulaiman. There's so many more questions that we would have asked you, but unfortunately our segment is up with regards to geography. Before you leave us, if you can just maybe provide us with any resources, or if our listeners want to get any types of notes, is there any specific website that they can visit with regards to geography?
Well, there's definitely YouTube. YouTube has a range of various videos where I think it's very important learners resort to these videos, because geography is a very graphical subject, and sometimes learners struggle to get the knowledge from their textbooks because they need to see diagrams in process and they can't necessarily picture it, so they need to refer to those videos. There are also lots of online lessons with audio in PDF, and these can be made available, I believe, from Redwood Academy. If learners do have access to Redwood Academy, they can visit the teachers there involved in very important online lessons that are now taking place during this lockdown period.
Jazakallah so much for your time, Mr. Suleiman. If there is anyone that's listening to us from Redwood Academy or maybe an educator from there, then inshallah, if possible, you can send through to us the link and we will forward it to our listeners, definitely, inshallah. Mr. Suleiman, Jazakallah so much for your time on Radio Islam. We really appreciate it, and inshallah, we hope to speak to you soon.
Jazakallah for having me. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. That was Mr. Ibrahim Suleiman from Nirvana Secondary School, and he was answering your questions. Yes, keep those interactions coming through. We will definitely take it over to next week Thursday when we have the geography lesson once again. The time is just gone 15 minutes to the hour 4. When we come back, we're going to be having, inshallah, Sister Zakia Varachia, a dentist, and inshallah, she's going to be telling us more about career guidance. Stay tuned. The Learning Curve on Radio Islam International. We come to the segment called Career Guidance, and we're going to be joined by Sister Zakia Varachia. Now, if you've been following us for the past few days, just a recap. Hafiz Anzala, on Monday, we had a civil engineer. On Tuesday, someone studying medicine. Yesterday, we had someone doing pharmacy. Today, we've got a dentist. Tomorrow, inshallah, we're going to be having someone that's in QS. But next week, inshallah, we will be having different faculties. We're not only staying to the medical one, but we're trying to get more information on the ones which are the, what we would say, the most common or the most popular that learners want to get into. So inshallah, this will guide them. We joined on the line by Sister Zakia Varachia, a final year student doing dentistry at the University of Witwatersrand. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Sister Zakia.
Walaikum salam to you and to all the listeners of Radio Islam.
Jazakallah so much for your time. We really appreciate it. We're going to go straight into it. Sister Zakia, understanding that you are a final year student of dentistry, tell us briefly about what is dentistry about for that learner that doesn't know what it actually entails.
Okay, so basically, a dentist is a doctor that specializes in oral health. So that's the health of not only your teeth, but also of your gums, your tongue, and everything in that area. Dentistry is a lot more broad than it appears to be. There's a lot of different departments in dentistry, and we deal with lots of different problems. So if a patient has to come in and is sitting in front of you, you have to gauge whatever treatment will be necessary for the patient and then construct a treatment plan, including all the relevant departments into the treatment plan. Keeping in mind our main aims of dentistry, which is to restore function, which is the way we eat and the way we speak, as well as the aesthetics, which is the way our teeth look. And as a general dentist, what we do is we mainly diagnose diseases and conditions, we treat them, and then we also work towards preventing them.
Jazakallah so much for that, Sister Zakia. Can you please tell us more about the scope in this career?
Okay, so I'll just do a brief description of the departments that are relevant to a general dentist.
Right.
So there's MaxFac, which we mainly do extractions, and there's periodontology, where we treat patients who have gum diseases, and in this department we do deep cleanings for the patient of their teeth and of the root surfaces. There's pediatric dentistry, where we specialize in treating children and special needs patients. There's oral medicine, where we identify lesions and tumors inside and around the oral cavity, and then in some cases we'll biopsy these lesions. There's interceptive orthodontics, where we treat minor alignment issues, as well as crowding in some cases. And then there's restorative and endodontic dentistry, where we do fillings and root canals. And finally, there's prosthodontics, where, for example, patients who have lost their teeth, we replace it by making false teeth. Mm-hmm. Or if patients have really broken down teeth, we'll do crowns and bridges for them.
Okay, sounds interesting. So, as you mentioned, when it comes to orthodontists, someone that wants to, what we would say, specialize in that, is that someone that goes and does their master's, etc., after dentistry? How does it work?
So after you graduate, and if you're interested in orthodontics specifically, then you have to, first of all, you have to do a research component to it, and then you write a primary board exam. Okay. And then after that, it depends on whether or not you get accepted into the program, because it's very limited seats available. and they only take a few people every few years, and then eventually you'll get it.
Okay, so to reach that place or to get that place in dentistry at a university, of course, you need to have specific subjects that one needs to choose. For someone that's listening to us, maybe they're in grade 9 and they're going to be choosing subjects soon. What are the subjects that one is required to have or compulsory subjects to get into dentistry?
The compulsory subjects are math, physics, bio and English. Those are the most important. And then as an additional extracurricular activity, it's advisable to do something like art or baking or anything that stimulates a fine motor skill development. Because in dentistry, you use your hands a lot and it's a lot of intricate work that goes into it.
Jazakallah so much. And can you also tell us, you know, what's a typical working day in this career?
So I'm currently still a student, so my times are really fixed. We start off every day with a lecture at like 7:30, and then we have 3 clinical sessions throughout the day. Each session is about 2 hours long, and each session is also department-specific. So, for example, we'll have a 2-hour session of MaxTech where we'll just extract teeth, and then we'll have another session of feeds where we'll just treat children, and then another session of just restorative and endo where we'll just do fillings and root canals. And then we have a lecture from 4 to 6 or lab time to catch up on lab work for our patients.
And for an individual, you might be knowing those that have completed dentistry or the course dentistry. What are their times like normally? Do they work like what individuals in that have studied medicine, do they work hours such as that, or do they have a specific time that they follow?
So for in medicine, it's a bit more unpredictable because you're on call and things like that. But in dentistry, your times can be a bit more structured and fixed. So they work according to appointments mainly. So if they don't have a patient coming in the afternoon, then their day would end earlier as opposed to other faculties.
Okay. And the admission requirements, maybe do you know any of which universities do offer the dentistry course?
Yeah, in South Africa, the universities that offer dentistry are University of Pretoria, SMU and University of Western Cape and VET.
Okay.
At VET, I know the requirements are that you need to observe a dentist or oral hygienist or dental therapist for at least 16 hours if you'd like to apply there, as well as you need a minimum of level 5 in math, physics, English, and bio, and then your NBT needs to be written as well. And I know a lot of people focus on the matric exam and not as much on the NBT, not knowing that it weighs just as much. Mm. So a minimum of 80% should be your goal for the NBT on average.
Okay, and when we speak about having those high marks when it comes to your NBT, does the grade 11 marks count as much as well?
The grade 11 marks will count towards getting preliminary acceptance into the program.
Okay,
but not really towards the final acceptance.
Okay, and as we go through this, you mentioned that a person needs to spend about 16 hours at a dentist to see if they actually do want to get into it. Maybe someone that is planning to go into dentistry after their matric year, by when should they complete those 16 hours, or do they only do it once they get acceptance into dentistry?
So they need to complete the 16 hours and fill out a form and submit it when they submit their application. And the 16 hours that they complete can't have been completed before June of last year.
Okay.
So it's between that time frame.
Okay. So for those that are planning on doing dentistry or going into the dentistry course, please ensure that after June or July, that's when you do your 16 hours, and that's going to be the ones that are counted.
Yeah.
Well, it brings us to the section where we talk about the salary of the payment. If a learner or if someone that just completes dentistry, what is the salary like for this person, and how do they move up the ladder?
Okay, so in your community service year, on average, you receive about 30,000 rand net salary per month. This also depends on where you're placed throughout the country. I know if you're placed in a more rural setting, right, you tend to earn a bit more. And then after community service, it just depends on where you're working and how busy the practice is. You can't really put a number to it because some places are not as busy, and then you have like a salary knock, whereas other places will be really busy and it'll just increase potentially.
Okay, and speaking about community service, is it a year or two after one has completed the degree?
It's 1 year.
Mm-hmm. And do you have to go to a specific hospital, or does the medical school send you to one of the rural towns for you to stay for a year?
You apply to a few different areas, and then the medical school will choose where to send you. So it depends on where you decide you'd like to apply to. So if you would like to stay in a Johannesburg metropolitan area, then you might get that post, where if you choose to go to a more rural place, then you might get a post in a very rural setting, and then there's bus accommodation and things like that.
Okay, and to end off quickly in a minute, your words of motivation for someone that's in matric or someone that needs to choose subjects, what is your motivational part for them?
If they would like to do dentistry.
Dentistry or into another course?
Okay, so going from a school to university is a very big jump, and the way you study in school is obviously going to have an effect on how you cope in university. So you just have to stay motivated and stay focused, and hard work always pays off in the end. And it's also very important to remember to keep making dua and keep feeding your salas, because it's a lot more important than you think when you're out there and you really need a boost of confidence and, you know.
Yes, definitely. We have to have our dini perspective also at the same time, performing our salah, making our dua, putting our reliance in Allah. And through that, that's going to be what assists us. Okay, so one of the interactions that have come through says that the government sends one out, not the university. Okay, Jazakallah for that. Sister Zakia, Jazakallah so much for your time on Radio Islam International. Really, it's been a pleasure having you. And of course, our listeners have really appreciated it. There is messages of support coming through. Thank Jazakallah for the clarification. We would like to say we appreciate the time, inshallah, and all the best for the remaining what we would say part of the year, and hopefully the lockdown doesn't come in your guys' way and you complete, inshallah, on time.
Ameen. Jazakallah for having me.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum.
That was Sister Zakia Varachia, a final year student studying dentistry at the University of Advaitisran, and of course explaining to us what dentistry is about. It's been a pleasure having all of you listening in on Radio Islam International. For myself, Numan Panjbaya, as well as Hafiz Zanzala Hafiz and Brother Zia, just a reminder that tomorrow, inshallah, we're going to be having Afrikaans as a subject, and we're going to be having a quantity surveyor talking to us through the career guidance segment. Till tomorrow, 3 to 4, Assalamu alaikum.
ورحمة الله وبركاته.